My guest at this time is Arizona Republican Congressman Paul Gosar. He represents his state's 4th Congressional District and is a member of the House Freedom Caucus, as well as the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. We've asked him to comment on efforts to get more critical documents from the FBI and the Justice Department to shed light on their actions during the 2016 campaign. And we also want to get his thoughts on the brewing battle within the Republican Conference over immigration. And Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Greg.
Congressman, there are so many different questions that Republicans want answers to, both in terms of the ongoing Mueller investigation, as well as what the Justice Department and FBI were doing during the Clinton investigation, as well as what the FBI and Justice Department may have been doing in terms of the Trump campaign in 2016. What are the most important documents that you're looking for right now?
Well, they're everything, to be quite honest with you, because the investigations have shown into Hillary Clinton as well as in the presidential campaign that there's egregious overreach here. But one of the most key points is the jurisdiction of what the scope of this investigation actually is. You know, we see Mr. Mueller on a fishing expedition trying to get anybody and everybody, tagged into a crime that they create. And so justice is slow-walking everything, and we have a responsibility to the American constituents, to the American public, to get to the bottom of this and share the information.
What explanation do they give you for not turning those documents over?
Oh, they hem and haw. They promise this, they promise that, Greg, but they constantly are trying to wait out the clock. This is an exercise that we saw in regards to previous things like OGR's attempt on Fast and Furious, the IRS, James Rosen and Cheryl Atkinson's attacks on the press, as well as unmasking. So, and Benghazi, for all that matters. And so, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. So what we're doing is we're wanting to pursue getting that second and special counsel so that the criminal prosecution can move forward where an individual can actually indict, form a grand jury, and proceed with criminal charges. There's obviously some criminal charges here. Everybody deserves their day in court. And it's not that we can't work and coexist with the Office of Inspector General. It just he doesn't have the ability to call people that have now retired or have been fired out of the government. And we can be working together.
When you say they're trying to run out the clock, are you suggesting they're trying to give Mueller as much time as possible, or they're hoping that the midterms don't go your way?
I think they're both. I think it's both, Greg, because when you look at this, a Pelosi-born House cancels all these processes, only the ones they want. So we want to make sure that these are started and that we get the council's scope under wraps and making sure that the bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. aren't held to a different standard than people back out in the real world. They're very concerned about an equal application of justice.
What's been the response from leadership on this? I saw Speaker Ryan saying he's interested to see the Inspector General's report that we know is coming fairly soon here. But what about your demand for additional documents? How active has the leadership been in backing you up on that?
Well, I think there's some interest in there. I think that they'll let it run its course right now with the Inspector General's report. May come out as early as later this week, maybe when we get back. There's been no course of action that Mr. Mueller has actually shown that there's been actually any collusion or obstruction of justice by the president and his campaign. So from that standpoint, we need to get going. We need time's a wasting and justice needs to be served.
Another issue that got quite a bit of attention last week, I'm not sure exactly where it stands, so hopefully you can bring us up to date, but there's about 20 Republicans in the House, along with probably about 200 on the Democratic side in the House, who are backing this discharge petition that would allow for a series of votes to enshrine DACA into legislation and into law rather than through executive fiat, as President Obama did it. Obviously, you need a majority to have it signed. Last I heard, they hadn't gotten there yet. What's the latest you know on that?
Well, they're close, but it's they're one, two, three, maybe four away. That's and they'll get that. you know, once again, Greg, we were promised by leadership to have Bob Goodlatte's bill move to the floor and have a vote. And once again, they delayed. You know, the same thing with the Visa lottery. Bill Posey was promised a vote. Once again, no forwarding of that promise. For example, I have been promised to have a vote up in the Senate in regards to McCarran-Ferguson, which would be a great start to health care responses in a conscientious way and actually lowering premiums, and we still haven't received it. So trust is a series of promises kept. Leadership has drugged their feet repeatedly on this aspect, and now you have a discharge petition that basically takes the power away from the speaker. And last Friday, we were presented with an issue, is that they would go along with bringing the Goodlatte bill forward, but we had to agree to a rule vote that not only brought the Goodlatte bill up, but brought up an immigration bill to be named later up as well. No one in their right mind actually does that. And so what's being proposed is amnesty 2.0. So what's being pushed in the discharge petition is amnesty. They're just trying to do this in a situation that's 2.0. And this requires leadership. This requires a thorough vetting of the issue. And then we're not going to get any of that application. The Goodlatte bill definitely looks at a number of aspects, you know, getting rid of chain migration, the visa lottery, border security. But what it actually does is give amnesty to these DACA recipients. That puts them in front of the people standing in line the right way. And there's some problems with that. And what the moderates in our conference want is they want to bring something like amnesty with some border funding without addressing anything else. That's totally wrong. But what we're seeing is bad leadership, not good process, poor process, and that's what we're confronted. And the Farm Bill had to be held up as leverage because of that very aspect. It was the only thing we had.
I was going to bring that up, so I'm glad you did, and I'll get back to that in just a second. So what you're saying is the leadership doesn't disagree with the goal of those pushing the discharge position. They just don't want to give up control of the floor.
Well, it's how hard they're actually doing it, Greg. You know, once again, you look back at history and it's repeating itself. You know, John Boehner brought the discharge petition up on Export-Import Bank, and then he also, his other aspect was cutting a deal budgetary-wise with Barack Obama. Look at Paul Ryan. He just did a deal with the Big Four in regards to a horrible omnibus bill of $1.3 trillion of deficit spending. Now what is he doing? He was a Gang of Eight guy, a sympathizer, trying to get that through previously in Congresses on the House side. And now, interestingly enough, the discharge petition shows up again. History repeats itself. It's not coincidence.
Let's get back to the Farm Bill. How do you hope to use this as leverage going forward to get something much better, whether it's the Goodlatte bill or something else on immigration?
Well, the Farm Bill, Mike Conaway did a great job in trying to get that done. The biggest joke on the floor was that Mitch McConnell had no gumption to carry forward the work process. That was going to go by the wayside. And then to give you another example, industrial hemp was going to be added to the bill. So you can take those two promises and run them to the bank. And then they were going to shove it back at us, which would have meant that the Democrats, with a few Republicans, would have voted for a feckless farm bill as regards to welfare reform. That's not the way we do business. Where is leadership saying to the Senate, we've got a bill, you get a bill, you bring a conference committee, we'll bring a conference committee. They get to have a staffer, for show conversation. Close the door, give them beans and rice and some coffee and water, and lock them in there until the white smoke comes up. And then you got a deal that both sides like. This is the problem that we've got with leadership. Time and time again, it's bad process, which leads to bad policy, which leads to bad politics.
Which leads me to my next question. Some have said that with Paul Ryan already announcing he's not running for re-election, that there should be new leadership elections before the midterm elections. What's your position on that?
You know, we would already, if Kevin McCarthy would have had 218, we would have already had that vote.
So he can't get there.
He's not there. And you know, the other thing, Greg, you know, the speaker is third in line to the presidency of the United States. we ought to be better than doing this behind closed doors. This ought to be a venue, and this ought to be a recreation of the public getting involved. Where do they want to see Congress? They're upset with the process in the Senate. They're upset seeing that we have bad process in the House. Washington is broken here. And so what we ought to be doing is sending this to the people to let them weigh in. We need to change, not just with the speaker, but the whole leadership team.
Well, last question is away from Capitol Hill, but close to home. There is obviously an open Senate seat in Arizona this year. The primary is coming up here in about 3 months. Have you endorsed anyone on the Republican side?
Greg, I haven't. You know, when I first ran, I saw a problem with our delegation getting involved and pre-choosing somebody that didn't work out with the base. So I asked the delegation to stay out, let the people pick, and then endorse and work with that person. And so I'm kind of a hypocrite if I endorse somebody in a competitive primary.
Very good. Well, we'll certainly be watching that as well as many other races around the country, and we'll also be keeping a close eye on the process and access to documents that we've been talking about here as well. Congressman, always great to have you with us. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having us on, Greg.
You bet. Congressman Paul Gosar represents Arizona's 4th Congressional District, member of the House Freedom Caucus and the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.